The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan's big electric switch. Scrappage is now available on your old car when you switch to a 100% electric Nissan Leaf.
Let's talk now, though, about Johnson & Johnson and the decision by the company to pause the European rollout of their vaccine. This on the back of the Food and Drug Administration and the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in the United States, pausing the vaccination rollout there of Johnson & Johnson and the use of the jab because of a link to blood clots. They say there will be an update in a matter of days. Question marks now about how long the delay will impact here and what impact this might have on our rollout program in general. It's worth going through the numbers again. 605,000 doses were due in the next 3 months of Johnson & Johnson, and it's a single dose. So that 605,000 is the equivalent of 1.2 million Pfizer or Moderna or AstraZeneca doses. So this could potentially, and it's only potential, but potentially pose a very big problem for us. Well, Paul Moyna is the Professor of Immunology and the Director of the Kathleen Lonsdale Institute for Human Health Research at Maynooth University. Paul, it's good to speak to you as always. The issue here, I mean, we're talking about blood clots again. Is it the same issue as arose with AstraZeneca?
It appears to be, Ciarán. So when we started the rollout these vaccines, there were some observations of clotting events, sort of more common types of clotting that you'd see, like pulmonary embolism, like clots in the lung and deep vein thrombosis. But when the EMA looked at those figures and the frequency of that, it was very similar in the vaccinated population versus the background unvaccinated population. But then a number of countries noticed with the AstraZeneca, there seemed to be some association with rare forms of clotting. So these are clotting events that tend to occur in the main vein, draining blood from the brain and also draining blood from the spleen. And the frequency there, if you look across Europe and the UK, where there's been about 34 million doses of the AstraZeneca, there was about 220 cases, about 1 in 150,000. In the case of Johnson & Johnson, there have been about 6 million doses in the US administered. And so far, there have been 6 of these cases. And again, there seem to be these very rare clotting conditions in the brain. So they seem to be similar, especially in terms of clinical manifestation. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So look, I mean, one person we understand has died in the United States is another young lady in critical condition, which is awful. But 1 in 1 million, I mean, that sounds to me, and I don't know, so you tell me, but that sounds to me like quite a rare occurrence.
Yeah, it is. These are very rare events, and I think that needs to be highlighted here, and they are very rare. And the EMA, the European Medicines Agency, who we've entrusted in terms of the licensing of all of these various vaccines, they maintain, for example, still with AstraZeneca, that the benefits across all age groups outweigh the risks. Now, that window, that difference in terms of the difference between the benefit and the risk, it tends to narrow with younger age for a number of reasons. One is, as you get younger, the risk for serious COVID decreases, where the risk associated with these rare clotting disorders seems to increase. Mm. So most of these cases appear to be at the age of under 50. But even with that, again, the EMA have come up and have clearly stated that the benefits outweigh the risks across all age groups.
The precautionary principle is what was cited by NPHET and by NIAC, the National Immunisation Advisory Committee. Karina Butler was speaking on News Talk Breakfast this morning. Have they made the right decision then, in your view?
I think the precautionary principle, and generally it's fine to apply that principle, provided that precaution, the application of that, doesn't introduce additional and maybe higher risk and potentially more harm. And I would probably have some concerns about that because the frequency of these events are so, so low. And now we're looking at a situation where for over the next 3 months, we're due to get about 4 million doses. Now, 20% of them are due to come from AstraZeneca. But if you look now in terms of, and you mentioned the numbers there with Johnson & Johnson,
yeah,
between the two of them, and I think it's going to be very difficult now for NIAC, if it's similar, and we're observing these rare events in response to the Johnson & Johnson, it's going to be probably very difficult for NIAC not to apply the same decision. And if that is the case, we're going to be left essentially, you know, a third of the vaccines are attributed to AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson for the age group, you know, up to 60. And if you look, the age group between 16 and 60, that's about 60% of our population. Yeah. So I think it's going to present major problems.
You'd imagine as well, in a way, the get out with the AstraZeneca was the fact that we are getting about 800,000 doses, and there are about 400,000 people, give or take a few, in that age bracket between 60 and 70, who could get it. So it's a logistical problem, but it's a problem that can be solved. If you make a similar decision around Johnson & Johnson, there are not another 600,000 people, because that's the amount of doses we're getting, over that age left to get that vaccine. In other words, if a similar recommendation is made about Johnson & Johnson, there's a good possibility we find ourselves with vaccines sitting on a shelf and nobody to give them to, which is the situation we're trying to avoid at all costs.
Yeah, exactly. And something that surprised me yesterday when it was announced, when, you know, in terms of at least the recommendation, was that there didn't seem to be any consideration in terms of what effect this would have on our rollout. And I think, again, I was surprised by that, because when you're trying to evaluate the risks of these types of decisions and applying precautionary principle, you have to look at the risks. And one of the risks is, how does this affect the rollout, and how many people in the under 60 will be affected? How long will that be delayed by? That is part of your risk analysis. So I'm surprised that needs to be an integral part of your risk analysis. And a lot of this is managing risk, accepting that you're never going to get to zero risk. But a lot of this is evaluating risk and learning how best to manage it. And I think we need to be careful in these situations not to apply the precautionary principle and potentially misapply it, that we actually introduce higher risk and potentially more damage by applying the precautionary principle.
One more question, Paul, if you don't mind, because one of the issues that Carina Butler addressed this morning on News Talk Breakfast was that what they took into account, and NIAC in making their decision, was that there are three other vaccines available in the population: Moderna, Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. If you remove one of them, suddenly that calculation changes. I mean, it does beg the question whether NIAC then should revisit their AstraZeneca decision.
I think they may have to, Ciarán, because this appears to be an issue, these rare events with these, what we would call these viral vector vaccines. So basically, if you look at the Pfizer and Moderna, they are RNA vaccines. They're very simple vaccines. They just pick a little piece of the genetic material of the virus, the RNA, and encapsulate that in a layer of fat. If you look at the Johnson & Johnson and the AstraZeneca, they use a different approach. They basically take that gene that makes one of the viral proteins and they put it into another virus. It's an adenovirus, and there are different types. So these rare events, if it's proven to be the case, but they seem to be associated with these adenoviral vectors. So if that is the case, again, and we apply the same approach as we did yesterday, that's going to have significant consequences in terms of our rollout over the next 3 months, where we're trying to get to a stage where we vaccinate at least 80% of the adult population. That's going to be a major challenge now if we decide not to use and leave potentially, as you say, Ciarán, vaccines unused, which would just be unimaginable, really.
Yeah, Paul Moyna, a professor of immunology and director of the Kathleen Lonsdale Institute for Human Health Research at Maynooth University. Professor Moyna, thanks a million for speaking to us here on the show, and joined now by Róisín Shortall, co-leader of the Social Democrats. Róisín, we appreciate your time as well. Can I ask, first of all, your reaction to that pausing of the rollout of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine here, or rather the delivery of the vaccine by Johnson & Johnson? I mean, it could have a huge impact here. Potentially, it would certainly tear up the government's ambition to have 80% vaccinated with one dose by the end of June.
Good evening, Ciarán. Yeah, it is certainly a matter of serious concern that there are issues now with the second vaccine. And that has all kinds of implications, obviously in relation to the rollout of the vaccination plan and the timing of that. And that in turn, of course, impacts hugely on what happens in the country in terms of potential for opening up further socialising and so on. We do need early clarification in relation to this. In total, between AstraZeneca and Janssen, we're talking about a very substantial amount, about a third of the vaccines that are due to be administered in this quarter. And that's a massive impact. And, you know, that was the key strategy that the country was pursuing in relation to controlling the vaccine and getting to a point of some level of normality. So all of that now is put into doubt and big question marks raised over that. Yeah. So the sooner we can get clarification from both the EMA and then our own NIAC, the better.
If there is a long delay in delivery of Johnson & Johnson, it does, well, you tell me, does it put pressure on NIAC to revisit their decision? Because we remember the EMA did not recommend restricting the use of AstraZeneca, just an additional warning. It was NIAC who've decided to restrict the use.
Yes, and more restrictive than some other countries, insofar as the recommendation from NIAC yesterday was that it only be provided to people over 60. In the UK, for example, that recommendation applies to people over 30. So there's a huge difference in that. And we know that NIAC are talking about an abundance of caution, which is very reassuring. But, you know, there may be question marks over whether that's going too far in relation to that recommendation or not. Now, I'm not going to enter into that. I have no medical qualifications at all. But there is a balancing requirement there in relation to risk, as Professor Moynagh has said. And I think there may well be a need to go back and revisit that and consider, you know, the wider risk in terms of the risk of actually contracting COVID. And then also the risk in terms of slowing down the whole vaccination program.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different risks there to be balanced.
There's and a lot of different questions to be answered. We're still operating in something of a fog on that front. So we'll wait for more clarification and hopefully it comes sooner rather than later. I know you would have been at the Rotas committee today listening to Deputy CMO Ronan Glynn and some of his comments getting quite a bit of attention, including fears about a potential fourth wave if numbers of social contacts increase over the next 6 weeks. Do you share those concerns?
Well, it's high risk anyway, and there are so many variables in all this. We've just been talking about the variables in relation to the vaccine program. And then there are obviously the whole question of the new variants and uncertainty about that. Now, you know, Ronan Glynn was at pains to point out at the committee today that his comments were probably misinterpreted to a certain extent. He was talking about there being considerable risk of a further wave if we ease things up too quickly.
Yeah.
And it's important to just bear that in mind. There is always a risk of a fourth wave. And that's why all of the different aspects of COVID and the threat to the country of COVID need to be addressed. And, you know, there's many aspects to that vaccination program, the public health advice, us adhering to that, us addressing the whole issue of having sufficient public health doctors in order to do that proper retrospective tracing.
Yeah.
Public health doctors being able to really investigate any of those new variants that are found in this country. And then the whole question of travel. So, you know, there's all of those aspects and we can't really afford to let up our guard in relation to any of them because they're all interrelated.
Yeah, listen, it must be exhausting for Ronan Glynn to find himself in a situation as a civil servant. Every time he opens his mouth, it's a potential front page story. Roisin, we appreciate your time. Roisin Shortall, co-leader of the Social Democrats.